What was the most fun for you to research?
Gosh, I still really enjoyed like the fashion and the food side of things because I think there's so much to dive into and there's so many issues. What was quite fun for me was kind of research sex toys. So.
Hello and welcome to the Age of Plastic podcast with me, your host, Andrea Fox. This is an environmental podcast that I started to help my eco-anxiety. I hope listening to it helps with yours as well. Although recently I've just replaced my eco-anxiety with COVID-19 anxiety. Last year in December, am I hungover or is it COVID-19 symptoms? Now I'm doing dry January. There's a lot more checking of the World Health Organization page about COVID-19 symptoms. I can tell you. I have to keep a cold cup of coffee and a Satsuma on hand at all times just to check I haven't lost my sense of smell. Thank you to so many of you who've been getting in touch recently on Twitter, on Instagram to let me know you're enjoying the podcast. I really appreciate it. Even if, frankly, it has increased my screen time. Actually, increased screen time, that could be why I've got a headache. Maybe it isn't COVID-19. Yes. Right, if you would like to get in touch, details to get in touch will be at the end of today's episode. If there's a topic you'd like covered, a guest idea, or even an eco life hack you'd love to share with me. And if you haven't already, check out the last episode, all about money, 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 money. We were talking ethical finance with Becky O'Connor. Coming up this series as well, we'll hear from a marine scientist and the very first person in the world tasked with saving tomorrow from the actions of today. On to today's guest, though. Have you ever wondered, what exactly is the most sustainable option? Paper over plastic? Dishwasher or hand washing? Cotton or polyester? Like relationship statuses, it's complicated often, isn't it? That's where today's guest comes in with their brand new book. Georgina Wilson-Powell, the founder of online environmental ethical magazine Pebble Magazine, has launched her very first book, which is out right now. It's called Is It Really Green? Everyday Eco Dilemmas Answered. Now, we spoke at the end of last year. Not only do we cover what's in the book, and as you can tell from the little podcast intro today, there's a lot of stuff that's covered by Georgina in this brand new book. We also talk about how hopeful we feel for the future of our planet, and if you enjoy the live podcast stage at Pebbles Future Fest in November last year, there is an update on something coming up, hopefully for this Earth Day 2021, Wednesday the 22nd of April. Now, Georgina's book is not judgmental at all. And as Georgina explained at the very start of the book, she didn't always have the most environmentally friendly journalistic background.
No, so I totally hold my hands up and it would be very hypocritical to not sort of explain where I came from. So, you know, I grew up in the 80s. Nothing was particularly sustainable where I grew up. I mean, my parents weren't out burning tires or anything, but like, you know, we just didn't think about it. You learned about saving the rainforest at school and, you know, I was interested in saving the animals and wildlife conservation as a child, but there wasn't anything particularly outstanding about it, or you know, it wasn't like we were growing organic veggies or anything. And then I had a very varied, moody career, but I spent a lot of it in Dubai, where I was a travel editor for a luxury magazine and spent a lot of time flying all over the world, which I was incredibly lucky to do. And it showcased to me how many problems there are on a global stage and where the problems are, and you know, to see the impact of our human behavior in so many different landscapes, and it's heartbreaking. And that really gave me an insight into looking at my own behavior, and kind of this burning kind of carbon guilt just kept growing and growing with all these flights I was taking. And when I was looking at how I could reduce my impact, I couldn't find the information that I wanted in a format that I wanted it in. So, you know, nothing like Pebble existed a few years ago, which is to give you accessible, you know, beautifully designed information around sustainable living. So I saw a gap in the market and I thought, actually, there's lots of other people who are normal people who just want to do a bit better. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, the ethos of that sort of intro that you have in the book really reminds me of Lauren Bravo's How I Broke Up with Fast Fashion book, where I think, and there's a quote in it which has stuck with me ever since I read it, about we can only do our best, but we could all probably do a bit better. And that's exactly what Is It Really Green is all about. It's going through everything throughout your life that you've ever sort of wondered, is it sustainable, and sort of saying, well, this is probably the best, and just giving people that information all in one space, which is so, so helpful. But I suppose you are a writer and a journalist. Did you always think 2020 is the year for a book from me?
I think every year is a book for me. Yeah. you know what? It was due out 6 months ago. So it was due out in May. I wrote it last year, very much with kind of COP26, which was, due in November, on the sort of horizon, thinking 2020 is going to be the year for climate action. It's going to be the year for change. And I remember having all these really positive conversations at the end of last year about, this year of action that was going to take place. Obviously, that hasn't worked out. So I think we've just shifted it a year. But I think now is the time. I think people have taken a step back, or had real, some people have had realizations this year that they want to live differently, that they can live differently, that we need to be doing more, that the climate has slipped a bit off of all of our consciousnesses, which is understandable given what's going on. But yeah, we can do better. And actually, a lot of the ways we can do better aren't that hard.
Yeah, 2020, the year for change. I suppose it was the year for change, just maybe not quite in the way you were hoping, possibly.
Planet had other ideas. I mean, we have all changed. That's
Yeah.
true. But also, it's for the book, it's given me time to go back and actually rewrite some of it. So we took the we wrote quite a bit of it in the summer to make it as COVID new normalified as we can. So looking at the chapters around work, around travel, and sort of positioning them more for where we are as a globe at the end of 2020.
Yeah, that was, I think that was one of the stats that really stuck out to me about how much you save in terms of working from home. And that's one of the things that we all know. Like, I think, was it Earth Overshoot Day came one day later in 2020 for all of us staying and working at home, which is mad, really, when you consider it.
Definitely. And I think, there are always ways, there are so many ways we can help the planet, and there are so many ways we can reduce our carbon. And some of them are really obvious and some of them aren't obvious. But I think people do get this sense of overwhelm of, there's so many conflicting information, there's so much news out there, and there's so many articles that sometimes we do nothing because that's easier. So the book tries to kind of cut through that noise and be your kind of companion. So you can dip in and out of it, so you can refer back to it. And it tries to give you the kind of the really quick lowdown into what you should be doing. Sometimes that isn't always a yes or no answer, but it tries to give you the best options for where you are and who you are.
Yeah, it's sort of like giving you that information so that you can make that decision because, like you say, it's not always an easy answer. I suppose, is that what you thought was sort of missing and why this book was so necessary right now? Because it can get a little bit, we've heard the term greenwashing, it can be very difficult to decide what's the best option, in inverted commas.
Yeah, I think you can get lost down rabbit holes about every single issue. So it's quite handy to have lots of different issues all compiled into one book. And also being off the internet, I actually think it's a really good thing. If you've got a physical copy, you can kind of refer back to it and like keep it in your kitchen or whatever. But also, I think, yeah, there is an awful lot of greenwashing, and it tries to cut through all of that because we can argue. Fortunately, there are lots of arguments to and against a lot of these issues. So we try and look at the science, we look at the data, and give you the best answer. And sometimes that answer isn't the one we want it to be, which is hard.
And I suppose you know so much already about this area with Pebble Magazine. Was it 2014 since Pebble Magazine? Is that when
2016.
2016 Pebble Magazine's been going for? So you must know a lot about all of these areas that you go into in the book, and we'll talk about some of them in just a second. But when you were researching things, was there any sort of fact that really jumped out at you that even you were surprised with everything you've learned in the past few years?
Oh God, totally. I think one of the things overall that surprised me before I go into detail was just how much of an impact we all have. And I feel like we know that deep down, but actually when you look at the stats and you look at the figures, when you look at what you're doing and then you times that by 7 billion or 7.9 billion, how many people on the planet, you start to realize how many resources we're going through, how much waste we're getting through. And that really, for me, that spurs me on because you start to see how unsustainable it is. A couple of the things that really shocked me actually were the things that I think people reach for thinking they're doing the best thing. So, like a keep cup or a reusable cup is definitely the right option to move away from disposable waste, but it still has to be used 65 times for its manufacture to be carbon offset, which is
Wow.
what?
That's a lot more than I would have guessed. If you'd asked me to guess, I probably would have said half that.
And actually, it's the same with cotton tote bags, which are, a million times better than plastic, and better than paper, but they have to be used something like 60 times to walk off the amount of resources that goes into them, because obviously it's still cotton, it's still material, it's still being produced all over the world. So those to me were, it kind of shook my feeling on things.
And I think we spoke about tote bags maybe the last time we spoke, because I mean, I don't think I need a free tote bag ever again in my life, and I've still probably got twice as many tote bags as one human being needs. So it's that thing, isn't it? Oh, have a free tote bag. I'm like, oh, I've got 20 in a cupboard. Like, please don't.
Yeah. I've got a bag of bags.
We don't need any more. Okay, so that's really interesting. So any sort of let's get into what the book covers, actually, because there's everything from fashion in there, including clothes recycling, to food. Like, is organic better? Do we really need the packaging? And even toilet paper. And obviously, I know you've got a pet this year as well. How green it is to have a pet, which must have been difficult. Is that like an interesting one for you to be working on now you've actually got the pup?
Definitely. And we've tried to make every decision that we can with a kind of co lens. But also I'm like, well, we don't have any children, so that's my, like, this is my get out of jail free card. But looking at kind of what we're feeding her, the poop bags, obviously a big problem. We're trying to like find the best solution to that. Actually invest in the ones that are better, even down to toys, like trying to make sure we're not buying toys that are just cheap plastic, that actually are made of bamboo, or they're made of like reusable natural rubber and things like that. So it's I think the book kind of shines a light on just how many decisions you could change. And, you don't have to do all of them. They're not all going to apply, but it just gets you thinking about every single bit of your life.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those things, like, we want to do everything sustainably, but we don't want to have, like, joyless lives with no pets and no children and no travel. And yeah, like you say, you...
I'm not saying that.
No, exactly. And you enjoyed travel as well in your past career and everything like that. So, I mean, it literally does go through everything you could probably think of in your book. So what was the most fun for you to research?
Gosh, I do you know what? I still really enjoyed like the fashion and the food side of things, because I think there's so much to dive into and there's so many issues. What was quite funny was kind of research sex toys.
So when I said you cover everything in the book, you cover everything in the book.
Even funnier was reading it out for the audiobook.
Because you've recorded the audiobook at home, didn't you, recently? You were just saying before we started recording.
Well, I recorded most of it in a studio when it wasn't locked down, but we had to re-record some bits in my spare room a few weeks ago, which was very kind of Blue Peter presenter, kind of gaffer tape jobs. But the proper full producer had to sit there and listen to me talk about sex toys, birth control, oh, and funerals. And it was Friday afternoon.
What a way to start the weekend with a talk of sex and death.
This is exactly where I imagine my career going.
I wondered as well, like, obviously the title is it really green? It just sort of sums up some of the things that I know I spoke about at Future Fest and loads of other contributors did, that there's contradictions with living sustainably, because we do create a mark. There's not really such a thing as zero waste. So what do you personally, having done all this research and written this book and brought everything together to make it really easy for people to sort of find out, what do you think are the sort of trickiest ones when it comes to finding alternatives, doing things sustainably, or maybe changing our habits for good?
So I think there's a couple of ones that are tricky because the infrastructure is tricky, and there's ones that are harder because we just don't want to do them. I think, we all have pain points that we're just like, oh, yes, I know, but, I really enjoy this thing, or it's hard for me. But I think there aren't the facilities available yet. Sadly for recycling is a huge issue that comes up again and again and again with our readers, within the book. The fact there's no national recycling scheme, there's no national policy, and a lot of our councils are completely underfunded is a really big problem. And it's very frustrating not being able to give people a straight answer. People want to know why their recycling isn't being recycled, or why it's not being collected, or why it's so complicated. And you can't...
Or why such a lot of it gets burnt, as you say in the book.
Not recycled, it's just, disappeared. So that's very frustrating. And actually, as part of that, ridiculous number of people want to recycle their shoes or do something with their old shoes. And there is nothing. There is nothing you can do if they are in a state that someone else couldn't wear them. Obviously, if they are still wearable, you can take them to charity shops, put them in clothes banks and things like that. But there really isn't anything you can do with a trainer that has massive holes in it. And it seems like such an obvious thing that we should have a solution for. So it really gets into the nitty gritty of like, okay, there isn't anything you can do about this, but perhaps that's where innovation will come, or perhaps that's where we can divert investment and funding. And then I think it talks a lot about, you know, some of the things that we perhaps don't want to change, like our travel habits or, you know, some of our shopping habits. But A, it shows you what you can change and how you can still enjoy those things, but also hopefully there's so many different options in the book that you can, even if you cling on to one thing, you can change everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah, completely. And I think, like you say, I probably keep coming back to beauty because it's the thing that I am like, oh, I'm doing all of these other things, but I sort of do allow myself to buy things in plastic that aren't necessarily refillable, because it's just like, look, if that's the only thing I do, then that's sort of where I'm going to allow myself that space. But you, again, one of the other things that comes up as like a big contradiction, and it's something that I know one of my employers, ITVs, are looking at now, but carbon offsetting as well, you go into in the book.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting one. And I think carbon offsetting in all its different forms is going to be the trend of next year. It's absolutely massive. I mean, we are seeing so many new brands coming to us who are different versions of carbon offsetting and different schemes and things.
Wow.
So I think the whole industry has moved on. It isn't as opaque as it used to be. And there is a lot of more transparency. And I think some companies really are going above and beyond and making it a great option, but it's not a get out of jail free card. It's not a case of like, we can continue all of our overconsumption and everything else and we're paying to offset it. It's reduce what you can and offset the rest. And I think that's a very different message. But it's never been easier to sort of do family subscriptions or monthly subscriptions to offset what you're, you know, where you perhaps have a guilty pleasure. But I think there are, as with all things, unfortunately, there's a huge amount of greenwashing and there's a huge amount of variety in the quality of the companies and the programs.
Yeah. And I suppose having brought all of this information together and know so much about it, as we've said, with everything you've done with Pebble recently, but did it make you more or less hopeful for the future having compiled this book?
I think that depends on the day. I think it makes me more hopeful because I think you can't change stuff until you have knowledge and you know, information is power. We need to do an audit. We need to have a baseline, even if that baseline is quite frightening, to know what we can change and how we can change and measure it. I do think because it's quite a condensed read, there's 140 eco dilemmas in there. It's quite punchy. We don't soften some of the language.
Yes, I'll agree with that.
It was the decision kind of taken to have very sort of short, sharp sentences and really get the points across really quickly, which I think can be quite hard to take on board sometimes if you're not in, you know, if you're coming to it new. But hopefully, because there's so many answers in there, it's a case of like, okay, this is the problem, this is the solution, let's move and let's work on it.
Yeah. And you also have a glossary of terms in there as well, which I think is really handy because, as we've spoken about before, sustainability means different things to different people. So do you think it's helpful to have like more of a standardisation of some of those phrases? Or
I do. And this has been my problem with a lot of this vocabulary. And I know we've talked about this before, of like the words of like sustainable and ethical can mean anything and everything and are very now greenwashed terms. But I think it's good to remind people that a lot of these words don't have official definitions within the industry. So you do have to be really careful when they're thrown about. So the whole biodegradable, compostable kind of message is really murky, actually. It doesn't mean what you think it means. So I think it's really good to explain what things mean, because when you work in this industry, you bandy about terms all the time, and then actually it can feel quite inaccessible to someone new. And that's something we want to do on Pebble next year a lot, is kind of really deep dive into a lot of these terms and help the people understand what they mean, because they can feel quite frightening or overwhelming. But also highlighting the fact that a lot of these terms are open to interpretation and they're not always used in the most transparent way, should we say?
Yeah. I'm thinking of that TV advert where they have to put the little disclaimer at the bottom about their coffee pots. Did you mean industrially compostable? Yes, you did.
Yeah,
Yeah,
all the
so
brands kind of going, oh, we're using 25% recycled plastic. And you're like,
75%
that's not
non for
even good.
why? Yeah, exactly. Or the refill bags. I'm like, yeah, but I feel like the soft plastic means it's now 100% not going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a challenge. It's,
Yeah.
one of the biggest issues for the book and the biggest issues for consumers is greenwashing.
Yeah. And I also asked you about how hopeful you felt. We've just heard our Prime Minister not that long ago refer to people who care about the environment as mung bean munching eco freaks, just to do the part. Any thoughts on that?
That are shareable.
I could add a bleep.
It's not helpful, is it? I mean, what I just think it shows how out of touch the cabinet, the government at the highest levels are with people's anxieties and people's concerns. Your mainstream person that's worried about the environment is everybody. It's you and me. It's the guy in a suit walking down the road. It's not this kind of outdated perception that the only people that care about the environment are, some like hippies from 30 years ago, is so out of touch. And I think it just, to me, there's a huge chasm between everyday people wanting to have a good future for their children and to make sure that the planet is in a decent state and we can try and repair some of the damage we've done. And then, where the sort of government and sort of much higher legislation sits, it's just such a gap. And I think this really shows it. It's such an old-fashioned view. Unsurprising.
Yeah.
I'm also.
Unsurprising, but I did think, well, he's trying to say that he is the Prime Minister of Environment, but it just goes to show that that's complete nonsense when he's spouting these ideas that are so out of date. I mean, talking of hopeful or not hopeful, it makes me slightly less hopeful to hear him say, because I'm like, oh God, what now?
We did a load of research over the summer with all of our Pebble readers, and it was something ridiculous, like insane, like 78% of them consider a brand's environmental footprint before they purchase, and 68% have stopped using single, trying to reduce their single-use plastic. These aren't hippie dippies in a shed, this is families and moms and dads and you and me
Yeah.
trying to make the best decisions they can for their family and for themselves and for the planet. And it is sad that the government doesn't seem to sit alongside that.
Yeah,
It
I
seems
can.
to think of it as something very other, which, isn't very helpful.
No, completely. I completely agree with that. Just before we get on to the final last two important questions, I did want to ask whether you had anything that's upcoming, any events for Pebble that we can look forward to in 2021?
So, yes, obviously, Pebble never sits still. Another
Because you
project.
never sit still.
I never sit still. So generally, Pebble's making community and the heart of everything we do next year. So we are trying to put in place a more structured community. We have a big Facebook community that's obviously on Facebook, but we want to do a lot more of that and really give people a place where they can discuss things and share some of these ideas and ask questions in a much bigger way next year. That's our sort of our big magazine focus, but also we love an event, and we did this virtual festival that you were very brilliantly at, and we had a lovely podcast
Great
stage.
fun.
Podcast stage went really well. So we're going to be doing a big festival called Podcasting for the Planet, which will be jumping off from Earth Day at the end of April, and will be 3 days of bringing together some of the biggest podcasters in the world, alongside sustainable big podcasts as well, to really put the climate change back on the cultural agenda. And try and bring everyone together to sort of talk about various different issues within climate change and sustainability. So we're going to be doing that virtually. So it will be free to register, and then you can listen and watch your favourite podcasters do a special episodes, and then catch up on demand afterwards. So that is our sort of massive focus, and it's going to be in a much more mainstream way perhaps than Pebble has worked before. So really trying to cross over and reach people that perhaps haven't been interested in various different sustainable issues thus far, and talk to them in a way that really piques their interest in a different way.
That sounds amazing. And that is for Earth Day in April, is that what you're working
towards? Yeah, so I think Earth Day is the 22nd, so this will be like the 23rd to the 25th, Thursday to Saturday, online, and then we're seeing if we can have some kind of physical element.
Fingers crossed. COVID notwithstanding, we'll see.
Obviously COVID compliant.
Yes, of course. Yeah, amazing. Cannot wait for that. Sounds absolutely brilliant. Where, of course, can we get the book from?
All good bookshops, wherever you buy your books. And it's also available as an audiobook, as you very kindly pointed out.
Yes, I might have to download that as well as having the book. I love that you also specify that your book is sustainable in terms of FSC for accredited paper and the ink and everything as well.
Yeah, so this is something we're really proud of, actually. It's the first book that Joy and Kindersley have gone to such lengths to make sure is as sustainable as we can. So it's been printed locally. They've done loads of research into the best paper and the best inks. It doesn't have any photos in it, so it's all like hand-drawn illustrations to keep it just black and white. Every little thing has been thought about to make it as sustainable as possible. So that's actually really, it's a really lovely part of it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that as well. That must have felt like quite a privilege to be like the first, like doing that, pushing things forward in the publishing industry.
Yeah, and it's changed how they work as well. So in order to try and make it as sustainable as possible, you know, everyone's been trying to look at their bit of the process and try and make it as eco-friendly as possible. So like not doing printouts and doing stuff on iPads and, you know, right through to the production and printing. So I'm really proud to be working with them on that and see how they've stepped up to the challenge, really. It's been amazing.
Amazing. So we do always ask our guests as well two very important questions, as you will know by now. So it's come to that time. Your favourite plastic item. Now, last time you said Haribo sweets, which I completely agree with. Has that changed? Is that still your favourite item in your life that has a bit of plastic in it?
It's probably along that line. I think just generally biscuits this year. I did the Everyday Plastic Survey in May in the first lockdown.
Yeah.
And it was just embarrassing how many biscuit wrappers were in our week's, plastic roundup. Yeah, I haven't eaten many Haribo this year. I think it's generally biscuits.
Gone for the biscuits. I suppose we're at home more, so it's like a cup of tea and a biscuit. It's just that bit easier, isn't it?
Yeah, with my partner. It's also
I thought it might be like dog biscuit or something like that. Now you've got the dog.
Do you know what? The dog. Wrapping it's great. We buy dog biscuits that only come in cardboard, and we've been making them, and buying food that comes in biodegradable packaging. So actually the dog's probably the greenest one of the house.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
The dog eats better than you do. I mean, definitely.
I love it. You're buying your own biscuits but making them for the dog.
I've made my own biscuits, but yeah, I made the dog biscuits.
Georgina, as well, I wanted to ask you, just finally, your environmental hero, which was Greta Thunberg last time we spoke. So has that changed, updated, possibly?
Well, obviously, she's still up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about this. And actually, can I be really cheesy? I actually just think it's everybody this year. Mm. Like, I think everybody needs to give themselves a bit of a break, a clap on the back, no matter what you've achieved this year in terms of being eco. If you've achieved anything, that's a win. Because it's been really hard. So I kind of feel like all of us getting through to the end of the year and still wanting to talk about climate change and really pushing for it and making changes at home and all of that stuff is just so amazing.
So lovely to chat to Georgina Wilson-Powell about her brand new book, Is It Really Green? On the Age of Plastic podcast. You know, and I know, there's just so much information out there. It would be great if there was a simple answer for every purchase or every choice that we have to make. But life isn't that simple. So this book is a really handy way to just cut through the confusion to the facts. So huge congratulations to Georgina for it. I'll put a link to where you can buy it in the show notes, obviously. Now, this topic came up whilst we were chatting. I don't often talk about pets. I'm really sorry, I don't have one, so I don't really have that many hacks for you. But today I thought, why not bring up an eco life hack that I think I was told by Beth Noy, who is the founder of plasticfreedom.co.uk. I'll link to her episode in the show notes. Sustainable pet toys do exist. There's some great ones by Green and Wild on plasticfreedom.co.uk, made of jute. So this is tough, it's long lasting, produced without any added compounds that could be harmful or could be released when it's chewed, and jute is 100% biodegradable. So there you go, pet owners. And let's face it, loads more people bought dogs in 2020 in lockdown, so there's quite a few more pet owners listening. If you would like to get in contact with me, Age of Plastic Podcast on Instagram, you can search Age of Plastic Podcast on Facebook, or find me Andrea_Fox on Twitter. Or if you don't even like any of that social media stuff, don't worry. You can contact me via my website, which is iamandreafox.co.uk. Okay, next week, microplastics have been found pretty much everywhere you can think of. Oceans, rivers, and now the very top of Everest. I'm going to be talking to one of the scientists involved in that study, Dr. Imogen Napa, about our plastic pollution problem when the Age of Plastic podcast continues next week. Until then, stay home, protect the NHS. Peace out.